What's going on, crazy world? Welcome to another episode of the Black Sheep Perspective. I got a returning guest here, man, that he was one of my first guests, one of my favorite guests, and we maintained a friendship for quite a long time. I think it's been over 3 years, maybe three and a half. He was one of my very first, you know, and I owe a lot to those people who helped me grow the platform. He's been doing a number of great things, an amazing fighter, fighting overseas, has a big fight coming up. We're going to talk all kind of details, a veteran in the game, very well known in Miami and beloved in Miami, even though his hometown is Chicago, Chi-Town. Welcome to the podcast, Jose Shorty Torres, my brother.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
Good to have you back, homie. Good to have you back, bro.
I try my best. It's nice to be here because every time I come back, everyone's always just like, Shorty, let's do this. Shorty, let's do that. The only problem is most of the time it's come to my gym so I can beat you up.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of beating up and all that, you know, I had the privilege. It was so fun to watch you guys bang last weekend. You know, shout out to the Goat Shed and shout out to Asim. You know, and of course, big shout out to Jillian Roberson, the Savage. She's got a big fight coming up. You guys tune in, Miami tune in, South Florida tune in. She got a big fight coming up. He brought everybody. I thought he was only going to bring Savage.
Me too.
I thought I heard you were going to be there, but it wasn't for certain yet. And then I was going with Loxby. And anyhow, before you know it, the whole fucking Goat Shed showed up.
I rented a car.
It was like 13 people, bro.
I rented a car just to go because I'm staying in Parkland. That's like an hour and a half. Oh, even just coming here was about 2 hours.
Right.
So
right.
Having to rent the car just to go see everyone at the, I think we went to UFC Kendall.
Kendall, right.
And dude, he walked in. I was like, oh man, they're running a little bit, you know, late. They're running on Cuban time. And out of nowhere, it was just a gang of people coming through. I was like, oh, okay, cool. We're all here.
Dude, and it was so fun. I've never seen, you know, I see the highlights, I see the videos. Mm-hmm. I trained several Goat Shed fighters. We talked about that earlier. I do striking with them. And they tell me, you know, the stories, and I see the video clips. But seeing it live, seeing these guys go at it live, it's just, man, they're all good. They're all really good. They're fast. They all have their specialties, and you know what's coming. And I got my little homeboy Loxby telling me, get ready. This one does this. This one does that. And sure enough, my highlight was to watch you go against Roy, which was just, dude, I'll pay for that three. I don't want to see you guys fight because, you know, you guys are great teammates and friends or whatever, but that's pay for type fights so right there,
Roy,
dude.
Roy and then Luis, the
wrestler. Michael,
I think he took second in nationals in Cuba, and all he did was shoot. You know, so it's like Roy being more.
And he's strong, and the wrestler was strong. I saw that.
He's a featherweight, too, you know, so right. He just walked in thicker than me, bigger than me. And just stylistically, yo, this is my first week back in the training camp. So I'm like doing my training camp to get into training camp, if that makes sense.
Right, yeah, of course, of course.
And, yo, Roy, we just get to play around, we move, you know, we're, what is it, the 5Ds, the dodgeball, we're doing all the things.
Yeah.
But then Luis, he's just, I'm just going to shoot the whole time, throw a haymaker, shoot, you know, haymaker, shoot. And I'm like, I got to sweep him, I got to do this, I got to do that. Because if not, if I ended up on the ground, it's funny, I sparred with him on Thursday. I sparred with him 2 days ago. And he took my notes and used them against me, and he did finally get me down a couple of times. I was like, "Oh my gosh, this guy is so strong!"
Well, but props to him because that's a great strength to pick something up so quick that somebody suggests or you saw that it worked on you, a stud Roman Greco wrestler. Why not apply it back? You know, so that's awesome. But yeah, I mean, that was a fun time, and bro, no bullshit. I told you there. I told you again when we spoke later on. I'll tell you right now, dude, you look good.
Oh,
you looked fucking
it.
Good, bro. And all the boys were talking about it, man. While you were in there with somebody, everybody was like, oh, look, Jose keeps going. He keeps going. Shorty don't stop. Yeah. He doesn't stop. He's got a cardio tape forever. Oh, almost a sweep. Oh, almost another sweep. And you do these quick sweeps in the middle of exchanges. It's impressive, man. It looks like you've been working on those fucking sweeps, but then again, I've never seen you do them like that. I don't know.
Well, you haven't technically seen me spar. I think that was the first time.
No, I haven't. Only your fights. That's it.
For me, I'm big on Muay Thai. The only reason, so when I was it's my third year in college, I went down to McKendree University, but before I went to that university, we did a national tournament to see who was going to be the national team member to go, I believe, to Brazil for the Pan American Games for Muay Thai. I fought some guy that was 6'2", at 135 pounds. I should have gone down to 125. But I lost because I didn't throw enough knees. You know, I was able to clock him, do all these things. Actually, he's down here now, Joseph Mueller. Super tall guy, great Muay Thai star. But he technically beat me in the Muay Thai game. So I lost a split decision. And then when I went down to school there, I was like, hey, you're in the neighborhood, right? He goes, yeah. Could I train at your gym? And it was all Muay Thai. I'm a small guy, so Muay Thai is technically supposed to be my kryptonite. You know, boxing, they say put your head at center, you know, pick the side, do this, do that. you put your head at center, and in Muay Thai, they're just going to clinch and start kneeing you. So for me, being the wrestler, I was like, if I'm going to get kneed, I'm going to have to do something to take you off of center. So I started learning sweeps. Now down there, he was technically the smallest guy by the weight. Everyone else was his height, but they were 185 pounds, 205 pounds, heavyweights. And I'm like, I have no choice but to spar with these guys. And so doing so made me a lot better with those sweeps. And obviously going with guys my size, it's a lot easier to just, okay, cool, I can manipulate them.
Of course, right. So, and again, very humble of you to want to go seek his help after you saw, you know, what happened in you guys' fight. And yeah, that's great. That's a great thing that fighters should do more often. You know, I was watching some interviews earlier, and they were interviewing GSP and asking him about how he felt with the whole anger thing when he fought somebody. How did he generate that focus? Were you angry? Did you? Was there real beef? You know, he's... GSP was a machine. He really was obsessive about who he was fighting. It was never a personal thing. It was personal with him, as in, like, I have to defeat this guy. But it was never talk it up, beef, you know, all that. And, you know, you've never been that guy. You've never come off like that guy. And I think that radiates. Everybody knows you're all positive energy, man. So
I try my best to be, at least. Or at least to the outside world. I try to be the light inside the room. That no matter what, I might be the smallest guy coming in, but you'll notice me. No matter what, you're going to notice me, and you're going to want to be around me, because hopefully it is positive energy, or at least some type of motivation to hang out with me.
That's good, man. Keep that up, because it's. I always say that I have a big radar for energy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can really sense energy no matter what level it is. And I don't know how I'm good at it. I don't know how I accumulated that. I don't even know if it's real. I think it is. And I definitely sense your energy. Well, you saw, right? When I saw you, we were like 20 feet apart. We're going like two little butterflies. Well,
I haven't seen you in like 3 years.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Well, we crossed paths a couple of times during certain fights, because you do commentating for a Titan when you're in town.
See,
at
I
least.
Get hit in the head a lot, so I forget.
As well, yeah. But I saw you. Well, you were busy that day. You were running back and forth. You were on the mic real quick. What we did was always keep in touch, and that was a good thing. I mean, I'll give you a shout out. I remember you're in the middle of commentating during fights on UFC Fight Pass. And I'm texting you. Yeah. I'm texting you saying, hey, some. And you answer me right back during the fight. I'm like, oh, Shorty, he knows how to, he definitely knows how to multitask.
I was like, I don't know if I'll be professional, or I'm like, well, I'll get to you real quick.
Yeah. No, you're definitely really good at calling fights. That's something that you do as a side thing. Do you see yourself trying to pursue that more in the future?
Well, that was my goal before I was released to the UFC. I was like, you know what? Let me be signed to them. I see Paul Felder, Dominic Cruz.
Right.
I see all these guys slowly transitioning to this. This is what I want to do. I can speak well. My mom put me in acting classes when I was a kid, so she always put me in front of the camera or even put me on stage. I remember doing a speech. I was in 7th grade in front of like 2,000 people, nonchalant, just kind of like whatever. My mom's like, that's impressive.
Right.
So for me, when it comes to on-the-spot moment where it's not scripted, I can wing it and have some fun. And I've also played both roles, play-by-play and color commentator for Titan FC, where I'm either taking the lead or just kind of following and talking about what I see. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm hoping that's what I do when my career is over. But you know, until then, I'm just, you know, doing these little jobs to keep me consistent to where I can still focus full-time on my MMA career.
So let's talk about the MMA career. You know, when I last saw you, you had a championship fight coming up.
I think it was for Titan, yeah. Or no, that was that for Brave? That was, yeah, damn, that was 3 years ago.
That was for Brave. Yeah, it was for Brave. By the way, what country is that?
So it's based out of Bahrain or Bahrain, and it's they call it the Pearl of the Desert. It's literally the smallest island in the Middle East. So if you have Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Kuwait, Qatar, Bahrain is like next to Qatar. It's like the smallest little thing. I believe there's a bridge connecting Qatar and also the Kuwait.
They seem like very big for a small area. Are they like UFC like, but just for those countries or for those surrounding countries?
Bahrain, before the laws changed in Saudi Arabia and some of the other countries surrounding, like Qatar having the World Cup there, Bahrain is kind of like, I wouldn't say it for sure, but it's like the mini Vegas of the Middle East before Abu Dhabi and Dubai became super, super popular. It's also a very liberal place. The military base is there. You have Brazilians there. You have Americans. You have so many because there's so much military. So right when you walk in, the main street in Jafar is called, next to the base, it's called American Alley. McDonald's, KFC, all the American fast food restaurants.
Interesting, American Alley.
So, you go to the Middle East, at least in Bahrain, everyone speaks English for the most part. There's a lot of Americans there. It's very liberal, very free compared to our stereotype of, you know, the women are always in black thobes and, you know, the women can't do stuff or the guys can only do this and do that. So it's a very free place. I believe you can drink in Bahrain as well compared to Kuwait and Qatar and Saudi. It's illegal
to drink at all.
Mm-hmm. You can drink.
Not even a man.
You can. So in Kuwait, you can drink, but only on the base. So if you're military, you can drink, but only on the base. You can't take it outside.
But so Bahrain, so it's perfectly legal. So alcohol in general is just illegal in the country?
In Kuwait and I believe Saudi Arabia still.
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, you mentioned the word stereotype, and we were talking about it right off camera before we started. You know, there's stereotypes out there that are just so inaccurate. And one of those stereotypes is against men. And not just that, but maybe generalizations. I don't want to say stereotypes, but fighters. You know, people don't understand what fighters go through. Mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a multitude of levels of what fighters go through. You know, they're chasing this dream. They're chasing this goal, this championship. You're chasing UFC because, you know, it's the top dog of them all.
Yeah.
Even though you love fighting for other organizations, everybody knows UFC is the top dog. If you're a true competitor, you want to go against the best. The majority of the best is in the UFC. The majority. Excuse me. And so people don't understand the pressures. You know, when you're trying to balance out life, you're trying to balance out relationships, mm-hmm. you're trying to balance out you're going through these up and down emotional roller coasters because you're depleted, you're fatigued, you're sore, you're injured,
yeah.
You're not sure about a fight, you're not sure if you can make. Just a lot to it. And I know that one of those, you got tested very, very immensely after our podcast. And I'm sorry to bring it up. I know we talked about it, but, you know, I think it's something that would teach a lot of people out there as to what not just men, but fighters go through. And I think it'd be inspiring to people out there, somebody who might want to hear it. You know, on our podcast, if you guys want to check it out, you know, go down into the page. It's one of the very first ones.
Probably the third one.
Yeah, like third or fourth, seriously. You were praising your dad. Mm-hmm. You were talking about your dad and how he was tough. He was tough, but you knew why he was tough. You knew how he was tough on you and your brother. You and your brother are like besties. I love it. You guys had the best relationship.
Fucking hate him.
But you said it was good for you. And then finally, he saw what it did for you. And then he was becoming one of your best supporters and so on and so forth. And then unfortunately, I think it was a few days later after our podcast and you went back to Chicago, he passed away.
Yeah.
And again, my condolences. I know we've spoken about this many times. You seemed to get through it as strong as possible. And I'm sure you had your weak moments behind curtains, behind doors, to your family, to loved ones, to whoever was, you know, gave you that shoulder that you felt that comfortable with. But you kept on with a fight that was lined up, the championship fight that we were talking about. And I think that fight might have been five to six weeks out after your dad's passing.
It was 3 weeks out.
3 weeks out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes more sense, right? And you were definitely going to try to tough it out. And I'm pretty sure you felt good and everything. Well, lead us through that because I know that you got all the way up into getting to the country.
Yeah.
And I think it was a couple days before, 3-4 days before. And I'm assuming you had some emotional, some mental breakdown. Can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah. So to start this off, you know, my big thing, and we talked about it off air, is I lost the three biggest things that I have ever wanted in my life. You know, we all have goals. And for me, I pursued the things. And sadly, all of them kind of, I got them and then they were gone. Mm-hmm. Instead of like becoming a champion and then, you know, staying the champion for a good reign. I was like, oh, touched it. All right, there goes everything. So for me, I had the UFC career. I was like, oh, I'm finally in the UFC, given I got signed to a dying weight class. But then when I finally lost after a 33 fight winning streak, I was cut. But then I was demoralized by the UFC, blacklisted. Even if I try to sign and, you know, re-sign with them today, they're not interested whatsoever. I can beat everyone. Doesn't matter. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, in my head at the time, especially being an American, what we see is UFC. Bellator's number two. You know, these other promotions are number three, four, and it just kind of goes down the list.
Right.
Brave is still very brand new. I signed with them in 2018, right after I got released. I fought Amir Albazi, which is right now ranked number three in the world. I'm the only loss.
He just fought Kiara.
Yeah, Kai Kara, right. And the crazy thing is he actually hit me up when I was in Vegas. We trained under the same team now at Extreme Couture. And he's like, hey, brother, you want to work? I'm like, yeah, as long as you don't have any hard feelings. I mean, obviously, I don't. I'm the one that won.
Right.
You know? So he had no hard feelings. And I was like, dude, you got a lot stronger. You got better. And, you know, I gave him some notes. And, I mean, he obviously took what he did with it. And, you know, he won. So I'm very, very happy for him. But, you know, talking about that from earlier conversation. But I beat him, and I wasn't mentally happy in that fight. You know, I felt like I could have finished him, but again, it is what it is. I won by decision. And in my head, I was like, man, I'm fighting for, even though I was happy to be signed with Brave, I'm fighting for a promotion that I don't want to fight for. My goal is the UFC, everything else behind that. I'm just like, ah, I could be making $1 million. I'm just like, ah, I wanted to fight for the UFC. So very unfair treatment, fight for Brave, win that fight. Then I'm supposed to fight for the world championship for the flyweight division. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm going to fight a guy named Marcel Dur, very good Brazilian, which I actually have no clue what happened to him after that. I think he ended up tearing his ACL and kind of disappearing from the face of the earth. But I'm getting ready for the fight, and I'm actually traveling to Abu Dhabi to commentate for Brave. But in the process, I was also going to promote my fight, and that's why I was commentating, being inside the cage, do this, right, shorty towards right. this, shorty towards that. And because of the airlines, I ended up missing my flight in Rome. They're like, oh, don't worry, we moved to the next flight. It's in 12 hours. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to just travel Rome. So I'm going through, you know, the city of Rome, having a good time. That day is my father's birthday. You know, so I'm like, oh, I'm not there for my father's birthday, but after, I'll go back home at least for a couple days and we'll figure it out, or even after the fight. And I spend the whole time in Rome before I call my father because of the time difference. And then right before I have to head back to the airport, I'm like, okay, well, let me call my dad. We have a good, like, 30-minute conversation. And I'm like, hey, you know, I love you. I miss you. And, yo, I'm glad you're having a good time. I wish you were here, because one of the movies we used to watch together, Bruce Lee movie, was Return of the Dragon,
right?
Where he fought Chuck Norris in the Coliseum, or at least the painting of the Coliseum in the background. So I was like, yo, the Coliseum is a real thing. I'm walking through the thing. I'm like, man, this reminds me of when we used to watch this movie.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, it's awesome. Called my dad. Even made, like, an Instagram post about him. Happy birthday, yada, yada, yada. Get on my train, which they put me on the wrong train. So I missed my flight again. So I had to wait another 12 hours.
Damn.
And so I'm like, fuck, it's the middle of the night and nothing's open in Rome, at least the airport. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to leave the airport. I'm just going to sleep on the floor here and figure it out. I go, cool, I have time now. Let me call my dad. It's maybe, you know, midnight in Rome. It's maybe, you know, 6 p.m. or something like that in Chicago. So I was like, let me call my dad. I call and my brother picks up the phone crying. Like, oh my God. I was like, what? Like, what? That kid's like hysterically crying. I'm like, what's up? Relax. He goes, dad just passed out. He was on the floor. I don't know what happened. I'm like, and my degree was pre-med. So like, yo, at least tell me what's up. And the way he was telling me, I was like, I'm pretty sure he maybe had a heart attack. My dad's always had heart pain every once in a while. So I was like, first thing I think of is heart attack. And so he passed out. They ended up taking him in the ambulance. And my brother's like, well, I'll give you a call when I'm at the hospital. I'm like, all right, cool. Now I'm in panic mode
right.
at this airport. And I'm just chilling there. But I can't sleep. And I'm on the floor. So it's even worse. And eventually he gets to the hospital. He has to do a triple bypass surgery. That's how clogged his arteries were. So I'm like, oh, shit. This is a serious thing. My brother, I don't know if I told you in the last podcast, he's died twice. My brother was hit in the head with a bat. Had to get brain surgery, cracked his skull, all this stuff. And then he got stabbed 17 times in a whole separate occasion.
Jesus.
So my brother's lost all of his blood and his brain almost swelled through his head. Like he was resuscitated twice, and crazy, he's still alive, literally 9 lives, you know, knock on wood. But, I was like, you know what, man, he's been through it. My grandmother at the time is like 90. I was like, man, that lady won't die. She's had COVID. She's had this. She's had everything. And she just,
you're feeling a little
so
bit.
So I'm like, you know, I'm optimistic. My dad won't give up.
Right.
But then I always would mess around because my dad and I complain about the littlest things. Like I'll stub my toe. I'm like, oh, it's all over. Can't do it. I'm like, damn, I get that from my dad. I'm like, man, my dad's like, wait, nap. Hell yeah. I'm going to sleep. I'm like, no, he's not going to come back. But so he goes through the surgery. I make it to Abu Dhabi. They lose my bags. And I'm like, oh, man, this day just can't get any, you know, any worse. And so they lose my bags. I have to buy a whole new suit for this commentating. Now I have to do, like, this whole fake smile thing when I'm commentating. I commentate. This is one of Khamzat Chimaev's last fights in Brave. Great highlights and all that stuff. Do the commentating. Fly back to Florida. And my mom's like, well, he survived the surgery. And now they just, you know, he needs to wake up. He's sedated for now. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm just trying to stay calm. My family is there. I don't need to do anything. I have the training camp. Now I'm 3 weeks to my fight. And at the time, Jillian was like the only person I really talked to. She was kind of like my only friend, that and Dean Thomas. And so.
That's right. You were very well connected with them back then. You were going back and forth. Sure. I forgot about that.
I used to live with Dean.
Right. Jillian
would be there every single day. She lived like 2 blocks away from the house. And so it was us three everywhere. I just finished talking to Dean before I even walked in, you know? So
Shout out to Dean Thomas, man. Great guy. Doing big things.
If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be where I'm at today.
I told him if he's ever down here, I sent him a message, man. I'd love to have him on the podcast, man. But he's a busy motherfucker right now.
I can tell you, as I get through the story, like, he helped me a lot mentally.
Yeah, I believe it.
He's the stereotypical black, like, sitcom father.
Yeah.
He comes in, tells you whatever advice. You're like, Dad, I'm going through some stuff. He'll tell you the advice, and for some reason, it's perfect. And then he walks away like nothing happened. And I'm just like, that was awesome. That was exactly what I needed. So I get back to American Top Team. That I'm staying in the dorms. And so every time I come downstairs, hang out with the fighters, hang out with G, and we would do some extra stuff after practice with Dean. And it was sparring day. And I remember my mom called me, and I remember telling my mom, because I'm the baby in the family. So she would always kind of hide stuff from me because she didn't want me to get emotional, because I'm more the emotional person. I'd be the emotional person during you know, stuff. So she's like, I don't want you to react. You have a fight coming up, whatever. She calls me. I'm just like, oh, shit, my mom doesn't call me. You know, so I'm like, who died? Please don't tell me. And she goes, hey, the doctors are saying some stuff, basically, like his liver, his kidney, all these things are failing on him. And I'm like, well, it's obviously not from the heart attack. It's from something else. So I'm starting to think it was cancer. My dad was on steroids back in the day because he was a gang leader. Mm. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, he's losing muscle, and then slowly he started to get from, I think, 190, and he's my height, you know, so 190 all the way down to maybe about 122 is when he officially passed away at. I was like, man, he lost a lot of weight. So I'm thinking it was cancer, but we never did an autopsy, which, whatever. So she's like, oh, all these organs are failing. Now, honestly, the machines are keeping him alive, and that's what the doctors told us. We can either keep him on the machines or we can pull the plug. I was like, you know, how about this? Let me buy a flight, and then I'll go home. If he makes it, he makes it. If he doesn't, if he makes it, then we'll pull the plug together. If he doesn't, then at least I'll be home with you guys for the burial. She's like, okay, cool. This is where, like, I'm now becoming the father of the family in my head. Mm. And so, and my family doesn't make decisions without telling me, at least from what I know. And so I was like, all right, cool. Bought my plane ticket. I was like, my plane doesn't leave until 4 p.m. It's right now 10. So I was like, I got plenty of time. We have sparring right now. Let me go downstairs and spar, because all I know is training. So I go downstairs, and training is also, and it could be the same for you, I don't know how it is, but training sometimes is like time away from the world.
Of course.
For an hour, 2 hours, whatever.
Different zone, just plug everything
and
out.
Plus, I get to, you know, relieve my stress on somebody too, whatever. So I go downstairs, and Jillian's always fucking with me. She's always like punching me or doing whatever, and she's like hitting me, but there's no reaction. I'm just like, and she, you know, I'm like looking down the whole time. She goes, hey, what's up? She like lifts my chin up, and I just have tears in my eyes. And, like, slowly come down, because at least with her, she's my good friend, so I didn't want to be vulnerable to anybody else.
Right.
So I looked at her, and I just started bawling. She's like, it just gave me a big hug. And she's like, what happened? I was like, my father's dying. I have to go home and, you know, do this. And then slowly people start coming to me, and it's just, like, this big, like, family hug and stuff. And, you know, people are like, dude, don't spar. Go upstairs. Do whatever you need to do. I was like, oh, I don't want to be alone with my emotions. I mean, what's one of the scariest things in the world? It's being alone with your thoughts. It just sucks. So I was like, let me spar, and then I'll go upstairs, grab my stuff, and then I'll go. They're like, okay, just don't kill anybody. I'm like, yeah, I got you. So I go spar with Pantoja. We end up sparring like 5 rounds, and we had a great time, which he has a fight coming up with Brandon,
I'm excited big about. Big one, yeah.
And him and I are sparring, and this just shirtless Brazilian, right after that last bell hit, my emotions came back. I'm like, fuck, sparring's over. You know, because I forgot. You know, I let everything go. And sparring's over, and he looks at me. He's like, brother. And just opens up his arms. He's like, oh, okay. You know, and I'm just sweaty-ass Brazilian hugging me. I'm just like, oh, my God. And everyone started hugging me again. They're like, oh, our condolences, you know, stuff like that. And yeah, I went back to my room, and they're flying home, making it just in time. You know, pulled the plug on my family. And then I had the fight. You know, and they're like, oh, so you're going to cancel your fight? I was like, no, man. I
3 weeks later, that's when the fight was set.
Well, in my head, I'm like, well, what am I going to do?
What's going to change?
Like, yeah. This is my first real big loss. Besides, like, pets, it doesn't really affect me the same way. So I'm like, all I know is the little losses that I've had, you know, to a perspective. So it's my first big loss. I don't know what this is. It's all new to me. So I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go in there and fight. What else am I going to do? Am I going to be downstairs in my room, cry for 3 weeks, and then be like, damn, I should have fought?
Right.
You know? So I was like, well, let me go back to American Top Team. I'll stay productive. I'm pretty sure that's what my dad wanted me to do anyway, so let me do that. And now everything's fine. The weight cut's good. I'm feeling great. Do documentaries. I'm kind of ignoring the topic because obviously it wasn't, you know, full center. And we get overseas, and it wasn't that the interviews are about my father's death. They kind of definitely let me be nice. The messed up part was it was at Worlds. I was a 2-time world champ as an amateur. So it's all these fighters who look up to me who now see on the news, oh my gosh, Shorty Torres' father passed away. Let's pay our respects. Hell, even Amir Abazi was there too, fighting on the same card, and he's coming up to me. He's like, "Hey, brother, I'm really sorry to hear, you know, your father." So everyone, every single day, is your father this, your father that. I'm just kind of like, oh man, please let this go. You know, I wanna just focus.
You were trying to get past that.
You remember when Khabib's father passed?
Yeah.
That right after he fought and won, he just broke down and cried.
Of course,
that's what I wanted. It just never happened.
Mission PT Rehab and Recovery is your one-stop shop for all physical therapy and wellness needs. Our licensed physical therapists provide customized hands-on treatments for all sports injuries, accidents, workers' comp, and more. No doctor prescriptions required for the first 30 days. Mission PT has one-on-one personal training for sports-specific needs, as well as general weight loss and strengthening. We are conveniently located steps from Dayland Mall. Call today for your free 30-minute consult, 786-409-5589. That's 786-409-5589. Mission PT, perform at your best.
So the crazy thing was the fight camp was going well. As traumatic as it was, everything's going well. Now, you know, we're looking for saunas, we're looking for hot baths, we're doing everything we needed. And this is when I started to look at more of the mental health perspective, where I'm not paying attention to it. I'm a guy, I'm a fighter, I'm supposed to be tough, I'm supposed to be rowdy, I'm supposed to do all these crazy things. And I didn't know how much your emotions came into play, but I also kind of did, because when I lost Alex Perez, a bunch of things behind that. But when I got in there, I didn't even want to fight. I'm just like, man, I'm just putting my hands up, whatever happens, happens. And I lost at my worst, and it's like, damn. Yeah, I was like, I didn't know that you could, it would switch everything off. You know, that's why I always say, now you can have the best machine in the world, but if you're not mentally there,
right,
that operator is useless.
Of course.
You know, so I'm going into this weight cut. I think I have 5 days left. So I'm there for 10 days total for this weight cut. The world, everyone's helping me, you know, trying to do this, support me, which is great. You know, you couldn't be mad at anybody for saying, hey, my condolences, or coming out of their way, especially for the different countries trying to speak English to me. Mm. To like, hey, even on their phone, they're like, my
right.
condolences.
It's a great gesture.
I'm just like,
right.
Yo, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. But the problem was, it's reminding me. And I'm trying to like, oh, come on, man. I'm trying to get this away. And I remember having my first ever panic attack. I go into the sauna, and I don't know, my brother's telling me some stuff. And, you know, he, I think, helped prolong that panic attack, like push it back a little bit. Because when it happened, it was just like, oh, man, the jar, or the cap of the jar, finally flew off. And I'm just, I'm I don't know if you ever had a panic attack, but like, you're hyperventilating. You ever see the people with like the bag?
Yeah, of course.
That's pretty much me. I'm hyperventilating. But the process was, in my head, I just got cut from the UFC. My relationship with my fiance at the time is slowly going bad. And so I don't really have a support system in that, for the most part, at least. And my father just passed away, which everyone's constantly reminding me about. So in my head, I'm just like, I don't even care anymore. My nutritionist, who is one of the most depressed people I've ever met, he would be like, hey, man, I've had panic attacks. Listen to me and just do what I want you to do, and you'll get over a lot faster. I did everything opposite of what he said, because there were a couple things in my head. I want to pass out and wake up in the hospital. I want to pass out and wake up back home. Or I just want to pass out and have my father next to me. Those were like the three things. None of it was good. You know, either way, the fight wasn't going to happen. So after the bad weight cut, or the sauna session where I had the panic attack, I take a break. I was like, you know what, man, let's go home. Now, 4 days in a row, I weighed the same thing after doing my workouts and increasing them to hopefully cut weight, because now I'm depleting water, stuff like that. So 4 days in a row, I weigh the same thing. So in my head, I'm like, holy shit, my emotions are holding me back from even pursuing more, pushing more. Mm-hmm. Marcel Dur was actually running next to me on the treadmill one day, and my body was giving out. He's just like looking at me, he's kind of like sweating, drenched, and I'm just like, I'm envious because he's just drenched, but I'm dry. And I can't sweat. I was like, dude, I can't do this. Like, I already had one fight that
your
I
body was talking to you.
Yeah,
it was.
In my head, I'm like, and I'm now traumatized from that Alex Perez fight, not because of the opponent, but because I didn't fight at my best. And even still today, 5 years later, I'm like, man, what if I was able to try my best? That woulda, shoulda, coulda. So I'm like, man, I don't want to even be put in that situation again. I'm obviously hindered. Let me just go home. You know, Brave hopefully will respect it and honor it and just kind of go from there. So I went up to Muhammad Shahid, the president. I was like, hey, man, I can't do it. He goes, okay, well, do me the favor and say it at the press conference. I was like, all right, it's going to suck, but okay, cool. And, you know, I got on stage.
You did a great job of that. I remember that.
I appreciate it. Right. And that was the hard part, is not breaking down, you know, because you never just want to cry. I don't want to be vulnerable in front of anybody. But as a man in general, I think.
See, but there lies the problem. That right there is something that I think we need to work on. Oh, yeah. As a gender, if you want to say that, but maybe in this era, whatever it is you want, you know, and what a crazy era to bring this type of topic mm-hmm. up, because the reverse is happening where the men are getting way softer. Bad. They're becoming a whole nother different style of man. I'm just saying men should open up more. Yeah. Men should be more willing to disclose what's bothering them mm-hmm. with their significant others, amongst their brothers, meaning close friends. Yeah. We shouldn't hold back so much because of this manly way of being. Again, if you're in prison,
we talked about that.
You might want to hold back on opening up, you know.
Yeah, but you're outside in the free world. It's hey, man,
we need to encourage each other too. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is, my mindset was at the time, and obviously I agree with you, is I'm in front of a lot of, to me, kids that look up to me, that want to get to my level, surpass me. I'm in front of my opponent that I'm, you know, supposed to be trying to beat up, that wants to beat me up too. And I just, in general, I'm a man that doesn't want to cry in front of people. Like, I'd never cry, you know. So I cry a lot now, but, you know, in my own little dorm and in front of, like, personal people, that's pretty much about it. But at the time, I held so much that it finally broke open that it hindered everything else in my life. You know, when I talk about my ex-relationship, it's just like, instead of venting to her, I was taking it out on her. But that's also because I didn't know how to handle my emotions, you know. So there was a lot of those things of, like, again, we're men. We're not taught to vent. We're not taught to let it out. We're not taught to just overall figure things out on that perspective. We just know the physical stuff of doing this, doing that,
right.
You know, always handle business. But, you know, the mental side's always been there. But now it's a little more public to be okay with not being okay, which is fine. The only problem is now I think people are becoming too sensitive and leaning too much in the opposite side of the spectrum.
So who helped you find that balance when you were trying to find it yourself? Because it's, you know, one thing it is, it's very difficult to try to talk to somebody about, like, me even talking to you right now. You know, I asked you earlier off cam if you were okay talking about this, because I'm not trying to dig so deep and make you go through another emotional roller coaster mm-hmm. in regards to your dad. If you talk to me about my mom possibly dying, I'll cry. Yeah. And she's well healthy right now. I don't even want to talk about it. I'll cry. Yeah. So I'm very respectful about that. I do think that it's difficult to how do I approach this person to try to help them with what seems to be a mental issue?
Yeah.
How do I go right at it? Do I walk on eggshells? Is that going to help them if I walk on eggshells? Do I go straight brute and tell them, you know, like, it's difficult. So who was able to help you with that, and how did they do it?
You know, the crazy thing is, there's only so many people that I open up to. You know, Dean was one of them. And so Dean helped me a little bit, but it was always that, like, the little 2 cents, walk away. 2 cents, walk away. And I think the biggest quote that I took out of a lot of things is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. Mm-hmm. And it's a true statement. We're trying to help people, save people, whatever the case may be. So when it came to me, the only person that was going to help me was me. But in the first year of after losing my father, I'm taking it out on people. I'm going through all the stages of grief, and I'm being angry, I'm being depressed, I'm being whatever, you know, regretful and all these different things. And I'm taking it out in the world instead of just, let me take it out on myself a little bit, kind of self-reflect, and then move on from there. And I think COVID was like the best, worst thing that happened to me, because it made me alone in my thoughts, but I had no choice but to fight my own demons and be like, all right, cool. I can't go outside. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's just me versus me. Let's figure this out. And I remember sitting down and opening up my laptop. So at the time, my relationship now is like officially dwindling away with my ex-fiance. So I was like, you know what? It's obviously been prolonged for years. I think I'm the one obviously holding us together, but in the negative way where, like, she wants to go. But I'm like, no, gotcha, you know? To where I remember writing a letter, and it was like a 4-page letter. And Dean kind of did one of those things where he saw me in the kitchen, and he's like, you're writing a letter? You're writing it to some female? Good luck with that. And just walked away. I was like,
there goes his vice.
I was like, how the hell did you know? You know, he knew nothing.
You ain't riding to a man. I can say that.
So I was just like, all right, cool. And so I wrote this letter, you know, and I thought about it for a week. And that was kind of like the letter of, like, letting her go. And so in the process, I was like, let me self-reflect on myself. Now I don't have the girl I'm leaning on, you know, where I was venting all the time to. But instead of venting, again, I'm taking it out on. So it wasn't the best, you know, conversations in the world. So it's like, you know what? Let me vent to myself. I opened up my laptop and just started journaling. I still have on my laptop today, I think it was 89 pages that I wrote, that I was giving myself so much anxiety to write, whether it was rethinking about past mistakes or my relationship, rethinking of past experiences with my father, the woulda, shoulda, couldas while being in the UFC or moving up to the UFC. I just rethought everything and just talked it out. And I literally vented to myself. And so it's like the shower conversation that everyone always has, the arguments.
Right.
But just putting it down into words and letters.
Right. You know, I do the shower conversation a lot. I know a lot of people claim that. And that's why I don't like to say the shower thing, because then I feel like I'm on the same level as them. But it is definitely proven that writing shit down, and not just for your emotions, just writing business ideas, when you blueprint something, when you have it, just all of it, when you write it down, there's something that happens where you're way more involved in it. You're giving yourself this peace of mind to think without any interruptions, and you're focused on expressing it through penmanship.
Yeah.
Without anybody interfering with your emotions. Because if I was trying to tell you what I wrote on my laptop, if the roles switch, I now feel the pressure of you're here in front of me. Mm-hmm. You're here going to judge me. You're here going to, you know, have an opinion about so on and so forth. And now I'm not going to be able to say it the same way I wrote it down. So writing it down, I think, is a very, very effective tool. And I'm sure that's something that really helped you, obviously.
Yeah, I was writing. I don't like reading. I'm just not a fan of reading. I'm ADHD. I need to move. I need to do stuff. I was reading mental health books. I was I'm a big anime guy. I started watching anime that talked about mental health and different perspectives and philosophies and stuff. So I was watching short series on that. I was listening to like TED Talks, watching videos, or even different topics of like, how do you get over grieving? How do you get over a past relationship? How do you get over a job loss? Whatever the case may be. And I started to go through certain things.
Did you ever seriously contemplate actual therapy? I'm not saying you should have. I'm just curious.
The crazy thing is I tried. And I remember my ex telling me, she goes, hey, how about you try some therapy? I was like, well, I'm a guy. I don't like it. I don't want to do it. You know, how am I gonna, especially going to a person, for example, like you and I have been through somewhat the same similar upbringing, to where like I can talk to you with stuff and you'd be like, oh, okay, cool. The streets, this, that, whatever. And we can figure that out. Compared to a therapist, maybe you, no offense to any type of race, but maybe you're a white dude that grew up on the north side of Chicago. Maybe you're not even from Chicago, so you don't know my upbringing. And now you're telling me to do stuff when you grew up with money and I didn't. Now you're like, oh, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? Like, yo, I'm broke. Or I don't have the opportunity for this. Right. But you did. You know, so maybe you don't understand what I went through, but now you're giving me advice that probably isn't tailor-made for me. It's just that general advice. So I did go to therapy. I ended up, luckily for government aid, you know, Medicaid and all that stuff, I was broke 1 year, so I took all advantage. So it went to three different therapists, and all of them were just like, oh, how about you take some anxiety medication? Like, that was the first thing. Was like, drugs.
God damn, I hate that shit.
And I took care of kids that were orphans and adopted, where they were automatically medically diagnosed that they have these issues, so they need to take these medications. But anytime they hung out with me, they're perfectly fine.
Right.
But anytime they hung out with their adopted parents, they were crazy wild. I'm like, well, they don't respect you, and they're, you know, there was different instances. So of course. Like, obviously, the medication, I'm not saying it doesn't work. Some people need it, and that's fine. But for me, I was like, I don't want to be drugged up everywhere I go and be like, this is what I need. My dad smoked weed, and that was his drug. But then it became an over-abusive thing where now he's smoking to breathe instead of smoking to maybe relieve anxiety or stay calm and do this. Right. So for me, I was like, I don't want to partake in any of that smoking weed, which I did for a while, because I was just like, you know what, man, I'm going through a lot of shit right now. I'm just try whatever's going to make me hopefully calm or happy or at peace for whatever being. And I was drinking, I was smoking, I tried different drugs. I just was like, you know what, man, I never really enjoyed my youth to a perspective of it where it's like I was always in a relationship. I was always focused on my career. COVID just hit. So it's like a lot of things aren't opening up, especially my fight being overseas. I'm like, we can't travel anywhere. So I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to do these, you know, do this, do that.
Wild out for a little bit. I'm just going to have a little bit of fun. Haven't done that for a while.
I can tell you it was fun. I can tell you some drugs where I'm like, oh, yeah, I can see why people were doing
yeah,
that. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, shit. God damn. You know, but, you know, with that being said, it's like, let me just be me and see what I like, see what, you know, where I go from here and how much I grow. And honestly, I think because I self-reflected where I had no choice, so much time on that, being alone in the house because Dean was always other places. Man, I took so many notes. And then with that being said, because I was going through so much shit, I've always wanted to be a big brother, a father figure. So I was like, you know what? If I'm going through stuff, some stuff, let me be vulnerable and go, you know what? I'm this big time fighter. It's okay to not be okay. Let me post mental health videos every single day And so that's what I've been doing ever for, I think since 2019, that's what I've been doing, is posting mental health videos every single weekday, Saturday night, pretty much Sunday when the day starts. I'll do a Sunday question day and people can ask me literally whatever they want. And, you know, questions like this or whatever. And I post, you know, a minute response and have some fun with it. I've had, you know, stuff. I only respond to stuff that I can personally relate to. I don't want to post stuff that I've never been through. And then people are like, oh, you don't understand. Well, yeah, technically I don't. Right. You know, so why am I posting it? So I don't even bother with that.
I don't know how many people say this. I know it's a popular concept. I know a lot of people back it up, those who have done it. I know that I've faced it myself forcefully in prison when I was in prison. But isolation, as scary as it can be, and it can defeat the weak. It can break down those who aren't mentally strong enough. And that's a lot, by the way. That's a lot of the majority of the world, okay? Yeah. Because we're humans. We love comfort. We love the warmth of a body. We love attention. We love every bit of, you know, what influenced us through our lives from the minute you're in your mother's belly. But to go somewhere else and really figure out who you are, really dig deep into your own, isolation is a blessing.
Yeah.
It really is. It's scary, but it's a blessing. You can see what the monks do. You can see how certain people who come out of prison like myself do. It's you know, because you said it yourself earlier, you're your own worst enemy, yet this is what you need, you know, and it's going to be a wild trip, but this is what you need. And in some crazy way, COVID did that for some of us.
Yeah.
And then again, unfortunately, COVID put a lot of people, did the opposite, because people didn't know what to do with all that freedom and didn't know what to do with themselves without having, you know.
The crazy thing about that is, if you're, what's the saying? It's like, if you're alone while you're alone, you're in the wrong company or something like that. Like, you don't like your own company.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I get that.
So that means, I took it as, man, I don't love myself. And my best friend, Julio, he's the complete opposite of me. So he's like, to me, I'm like the angel, the devil, and we always butt heads, but we see different, you know, others' perspectives, and we talk about it all the time. And he's like, man, you're not comfortable with yourself. That's really all it is. Like, you don't love yourself. That's why you do too much for others. You're trying to please people and you can't even please yourself. And it's like, damn. So I looked at it in my last relationship of, I was at maybe 20% of me. And by the time I did get to see her because of the long distance thing, or even if it was over the phone, I'm giving you 20% of me. Even though that's 100% of me right now, you don't deserve 20. Hell, I don't deserve 20. So instead of, and I used to do this of just spreading myself too thin to help everyone, that by the time I came home, I couldn't even help myself. I was like, let me spend time with me first so I can be however much percentage I can be, 80, 100%, whatever the case may be. And you deserve that more than whatever what I'm giving you now. So that's why I let her go, and that I needed time to really fix myself, to go, I love myself, I'm comfortable with stuff. I mean, how many times people get insecure about stuff? It's like, oh, well, probably because you're not, you know, confident about some shit on yourself. It's not the other guy or it's not the other girl, whatever the case may be, circumstances, it's just about you.
So when you do you know, because, you know, I'm sure there's naysayers or people listening or watching who think at some point you do need a professional to determine something. So you kind of went that route. You got, you know, 3 or 4 visits to different therapists, offer you medicine, this and that. You got advice from certain friends, Dean Thomas, your brother, whoever it might be. At what point did you kind of feel or think or figure out, okay, I'm good now. I'm good. At least I'm good enough. I might not be over it. Yeah. Are you ever over it? Kind of like when they talk about when you have an addiction, you're addicted forever, right? You're just always recovering. Mm-hmm. So was there a moment that hit where you're just like, okay, I'm over it. I'm good now. Or was it just like, okay, I feel my best at this point and I've gotten enough advice from those who I think that really matter and I feel good, mentally I feel good. When did all that happen where you felt good enough to, all right, let's move on now, let's go on to the next chapter?
You know, it was crazy because during COVID, I'm going through that stuff, my relationship's over, not in the UFC, father passed away, and there's at least a solid year of no activity. It's just training, it's just repeating. You know, that's all I'm doing, but it's all in the house. So I'm in a sense, given a semi-prison perspective, I'm in solitude.
Right.
That's all I'm doing. Right. You know, maybe go to the store real quick, come on back. That's it. Now I'm in my room by myself. So through all the writing, through all the stuff, I was like, you know what? My guy is on Tinder too. I was like, you know, let me go on Tinder, have some fun, and maybe I can use this as, am I ready for another relationship or do I need to work on myself still? And I think that's also the bad thing is me. I was so codependent on my last relationship or just codependent on people that I was like, you know what, at least on the emotional side, I was like, you know what, let me try dating, let's see how this works. And some of it went well, and then some of it was like, oh, damn, I still need to work on that. Like, you won't know until you're put into that situation, you know? It's like when people say, hey, I can bungee jump, do all this stuff, and you see that little
they're shitting on themselves, yeah, you got a viral clip, yeah.
So that was me, where I'm in situations, I'm like, oh, damn, I'm not ready for this, or I'm not ready for that, or I need to still improve on this. I thought I was there, but that was really just talk to myself, trying to hype me up.
Right.
Work on this. So that came into play. That also kind of transitioned to my MMA game. You know what? I need to work on stuff. Let me work on head movement. Let me work on this. Let me work on that. More sweeps, whatever the case may be. And I started traveling and training more. And I was like, you know what? This time in the car, I get to listen to podcasts, listen to stuff that helps me better prepare for whatever I'm about to do. And then I'm 100% when I'm able to go in there, or at least better than just being alone, being to myself. And I was doing a lot of fake it to make it for a while until it became kind of a normal thing of like, you know what? This routine is kind of nice. You know, as long as I stay positive, I'm fine. Bad shit's always going to happen to you.
Of course.
And I can tell you with the Alex Perez fight, that was a lot of bad shit. But then I moved to the Amir Abazi fight. It was practically the same shit. But for some reason, I was able to better push through it because I've been through it once. Then after Amir Abazi fight, you know, the fight against Marcel Dur didn't happen. I was like, fuck, okay, this is a whole new obstacle I need to overcome. Then I fought Sean Santella. Wasn't 100% there, but I still made the fight. Cool, you know, hey, that's a little progress. Went to a draw. I was supposed to rematch him. Then my opponent, he ended up backing out. He ended up getting injured. Somebody else came in, and then situations got, you know, pushed to the side or whatever the case may be, where I'm like, okay, you know what, man, don't panic. You just got to push through it. Just see where it goes. If it doesn't work, that stuff didn't work, but you're still here, right? So let's not make it the end of the world. And actually, one of the biggest quotes, and this is Dean Thomas, I went to go fight Ali Bagutinov in Russia. So I won the first fight against, it was supposed to be Sean Santella. I won the rematch against Blaine O'Driscoll. And I went to fight Ali in the semifinals. Win this, I fight for the belt. And I get there in Russia, Dagestan in general, was just rough. And it wasn't like the people or anything, it was just the nature, man. These guys are tough, they're strong, I got beat up a lot. I overtrained for sure, and that's definitely on my side. And I ended up getting injured to where I still tried to push through. I was like, you know what, it's physical, I'll push through. Even if I fight with a limp, I'll be fine, I'll do it. And situations made it work to where, like, I couldn't, you know, cut the weight. And so I was like, you know what, after this fight, no matter what, I don't even care if I win it and go to the finals, I'm bumping up. I can't make 25 anymore. And I called Dean, and in my head, I'm letting everyone down. I'm like, man, I've been in Dagestan for 2 months. I've been training with Dean for about a year, living with him, and he's taking care of me. You know, I'm letting so many people down that believe in me. And that's what I'm thinking in my head. And Dean texts me. He goes, hey, if Ali takes the fight, because I'm going to miss weight automatically, I'm just trying to see if he wants to take the fight, just to take the fight. He, in general, ended up not taking the fight. But he goes, hey, I'm panicking. He goes, and I'm definitely an overthinker. He goes, if Ali takes a fight, you're going to fight him? I was like, well, yeah, that's exactly what I want. I'm like, okay. If you take the fight and he loses, or if you lose, what are you going to do? I was like, well, yeah, I'm going to get back in there and fight because I want to get back in the winner's circle. He goes, okay. Ali doesn't take the fight and they find you somebody else in a month. Are you going to take it? I was like, yeah. He goes, win or lose, you're going to fight again? I'm like, yeah. He goes, so no matter what, you're going to fight again. It's okay. Yeah, this situation sucks right now. Let it dwell in a little bit. Go ahead. You have to let it out. But take your day. And after that, it's over.
Spoken like a veteran, man.
Yeah, he's like, he's been in it so many years. Sure he's gone through his fair share of trials and tribulations where it's like, you know, it is what it is. And that's kind of now, ever since that moment passed, I'm like, it is what it is. I mean, how many times, like even just coming here, I'm like, oh, I'll text you a half an hour in, right where I'm texting you, it's a car accident, and my timer went up an extra 30 minutes. I'm like, yo, I've already been on the road for an hour.
I live by that, Shorty. I roll with the punches so easy, and I'm like, listen, that it happened. That's it. It is what it is. What are we going to do next? We can't sit here and dwell. We got to give it our best shot, and what will happen will happen. I'm not a godly believer, but what will happen will happen, meaning the chips will fall however they fall based upon, you know, the efforts put forth. But I'm sure it is hard for Dean to even give you that type of advice because, you know, you're one of his favorite fighters. You're a true friend of his. You're a true friend of his. You're probably like family. I mean, fuck, you're living in his house. You know, that's real shit there. And yeah, he's trying to find the best way to tell you, give you the best advice. You know, that's difficult for people in those situations. But man, he said it real solid, like, and it was so that was like, boom. That was maybe that. Okay, I'm good to go now.
Throughout everything, it was always me helping me. But like you were saying, you know, seeking professional help. Every once in a while, I'd be like, hey, Dean, you know? And like if I was really kind of like, I don't know, I can't figure it out, let me talk to Dean. Let me call my brother. Let me call my manager, Lex. Let me vent to people. I can tell you this. I've written my death note multiple times. I've written suicide notes where I'm like, I'm not going to do it. But if I ever just somehow reach over the edge, this is why. And I just want to thank certain people and whatever the case may be. But again, we talked about it off air. Like I was never suicidal where I'm like, I'm going to do it. But I was just like, man, if a car was about to hit me, I wouldn't move. Which it actually happened once. I was in the promenade in Coconut Creek, and it's a very, very rich neighborhood. And I'm walking through it, and this Mercedes, like, looks like, you know, going through is about to hit me. And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, worst comes to worst, if I survive this, I'll make a bank.
But yeah.
So I stop in the middle of the street, and she, you know, stops right in front of me. She goes, you know, convertible. She goes, why the fuck didn't you move? And I'm just, like, mumbling. I'm like, why didn't you fucking hit me?
Right.
I'm like, sorry. And I just kind of went on through my day. But
that's crazy.
Like you said, things happen for a reason. And I am the best I can possibly be right now. Where even me mentally, I feel that I'm ready for a relationship. I'm ready for a world title fight. And I'm ready for whatever's, you know, in the future. Or maybe I'm even a father.
Mission PT Rehab and Recovery is your one-stop shop for all physical therapy and wellness needs. Our licensed physical therapists provide customized hands-on treatments for all sports injuries, accidents, workers' comp, and more. No doctor prescriptions required for the first 30 days. Mission PT has one-on-one personal training for sports-specific needs, as well as general weight loss and strengthening. We are conveniently located steps from Dayland Mall. Call today for your free 30-minute consult, 786-409-5589. That's 786-409-5589. Mission PT, perform at your best.
So now you're feeling yourself again. I mean, obviously because you have a fight lined up.
Mm-hmm.
And what date is that, by the way?
August 11th.
But this time you said it was not going to be overseas.
Well, a different city.
Different city. Yeah. You're going to Colombia.
Yeah.
Bogota.
I'll be, and I'm hoping to get there a little earlier because of the elevation, the altitude's real high.
You had to tell me that. I didn't even realize that, that it's that high. Holy shit.
Actually, Juan Puerta was the one that told me. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot we're in the mountains. So it reminds me of the Cain Velasquez Verdum fight.
Right. Yeah, I remember when that.
Known as like the workhorse, not an ori. Went there and he had one solid round. That was it. And Verdum's like, oh, this is great. Knocked him out.
Not too long ago, they went to Utah. UFC went to Utah, and every fighter said the same thing. And most of them went a week ahead of time.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to tell people, man, a week allows you to walk around and not have a fucking breathing ordeal. Yeah. But you need 2 or 3 weeks to really feel yourself, man.
Yeah, I took kind of like a little vacation for once in my life, an actual vacation without getting punched in the face. I went to Guadalajara, Ciudad de Mexico, and Tulum. And when I was in Mexico City, it's in the mountains. I forgot. I didn't realize that. And that's actually where that fight was for Cain Velasquez and Verdum, to where my friend and I worked out. And he's, you know, just an average Joe, you know, working out. Oh, I want to work out with the MMA fighters, stuff like that. And out of nowhere, I'm like, yeah, keep going. You can do it. I'm just like, dude, we're doing the same thing. You're the average Joe. Yeah. I'm known for these intense workouts, but I can't even, like, you ever do a workout and you're like, all right, this is what we're going to do. And then halfway through, you're like, this is the worst idea I've ever come up
with.
Yeah,
of course.
That was that. I'm like, dude, I do this every day. Why am I struggling here compared to literally yesterday in Guadalajara? I'm doing the same exact thing. It was the altitude. Yeah. And I was only there for a week, and it felt like I had a fever. I think there's some called altitude sickness.
Yes, there is.
Like nausea, you know, throw up, right. Feel weak. I felt jet lagged, and I was jet lagged because I was traveling all through Mexico. So I did a lot of stuff, but I'm like, man, thinking about that, and then when Juan Puerta was like, oh, Bogota is really, really high as well. You should get some altitude training. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that.
Is this for a number one contender spot?
No, this is for the belt.
Oh, this is for the belt?
Yeah, this will be the main event. At the Pan American Games for the IMUF. So the IMUF will be hosting the Pan American Games. It's 4 days in a row. The fifth day is the Brave event. I'll be the main event for that. And then the sixth day is the championship for the Pan American Games.
So there's going to be a lot of eyes over there, a lot of fans, a lot of tourists.
So when we talk about, you know, the process of when I fought at Worlds, and I was the main event for the belt, where everyone's like, oh, my condolences to your father. It's like I kind of, in a sense, it might not be the same group of people, but the same organization where I kind of redeemed myself in front of the people who helped make me, which was the IMUF. You know, they gave me that pedestal to use and grow on. And then now being able to fight in front of them, hopefully, especially the Latinos, like, you can be like me with this blueprint, if not hopefully surpass me.
Right. We were talking about your Spanish. You've been working on your Spanish a little bit better.
When I was in Mexico, so, you know, the fun thing is, obviously, I'm single, so I date. You know, when I travel, if I can get a date, awesome. Let's spend the day together, have a good time. And when I was in Ciudad de Mexico, I went to, my friend was like, oh, you love dessert? Let's go to a panaderia and, you know, I have a good time. And there was this girl who reminded me of the animate, like one of the animated girls from El Dorado. And I was like, oh, man, she's gorgeous. She looks cool. And so my Spanish is broken to an extent. So I was like, you know what? It's actually, I've learned that it's actually cuter when
you love it. Yeah. When you struggle.
And well, because even though
you're trying,
even though I am Mexican Puerto Rican, given I wasn't raised speaking Spanish, so that's why my Spanish is broken. I didn't get that privilege, sadly. But with that being said, is they look at, oh, no matter what, you're an American. So your Spanish is going to be different. You know,
right.
Your accent or what, even if it's perfect, you're going to have an American accent a little bit.
100%.
You know, so when I started talking to her, you know, she understood everything I was saying, but I showed her the picture. I was like, man, you look like this girl. And she's just like, oh, you know, like kind of laughed, whatever. And then I just played it smooth. And my friends were watching, like, oh, what the hell? Like, you got her number? I was like, yeah, I'm hanging out with her tomorrow.
Spitting fire.
And the thing was, she only knew Spanish. Like, even she, there was no, like, I know a little bit of English. It was just maybe if I ordered for, you know, bread, you know, at the panaderia, that's pretty much maybe, you know, and some coffee.
But that made it a more interesting, fun date, dude, I would imagine.
I spent 12 hours with her. And I learned how much better my Spanish has gotten of, like, because you have no choice.
Right.
And so when you're trying to explain stuff, when you don't, can't think of the word, you maybe remember other words. And you're like, oh, this, that. Right. And I start
connecting them together, yeah.
And I understand, for the most part, besides maybe some things maybe I've never heard of or that I don't use as often, but it was dope. It was a good experience. She enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And then even when I came back to the Goat Shed on Thursday, there's a guy named Freddie. He's the boxer. He's
right,
like,
Cuban.
Yeah, Spider. And he literally, the first sentence, he's like, dude, your Spanish got a lot better. I was like, oh, awesome. Like, it made me blush, dude. You know, because
funny, because I was giving Roy props for his English.
Dude, I told him
his fucking English is phenomenal, dude.
I was like, dude, you never went to class for this? Like, no, I just talked to people. I was like,
but he's making a valiant effort, and that's what counts. You know, you got to say, you guys are products.
Yeah.
You guys are products. You are literally a product that you have to market, and why not be able to speak two languages? By the way, you were mentioning Mexico or Guadalajara. How do you feel about the fight tonight, dude? We got Aldana representing Mexico going against the GOAT, you know, the GOAT,
yo,
who you train with side by side on.
We could have a fourth, you know,
I know,
UFC champion from Mexico, you know, born and raised in Mexico. So that is a big thing. Actually, when I was in Guadalajara, I went for fights, and all the fighters being primarily Mexican, like, just sparring with those guys, I'm like, yo, this is fun because they're tough. And then I hit up Alexa Grouse, and I was like, hey, you know, do you want to hang out? You know, obviously train. She ended up, I didn't notice how big Guadalajara was. Like, she was in the whole opposite side. I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. But just being
She's beautiful, by the way.
Oh, she's
fine. I think Alexa Grasso is beautiful.
She's very beautiful. She's a great athlete. She supports her people. I actually passed up the painting that they have for her, the mural.
Oh, right. Yeah,
I was like,
yo,
this is dope.
Yeah.
So I'm very happy for her, because when I met her, that was in 2016 when I just made my pro debut. We were both doing, like, meet and greets, kind of like the prospects going to inevitably be in the UFC, and we're doing meet and greets with, like, Chris Cyborg and Eddie Bravo and stuff like that. So I'm like, oh, dope.
I was telling one of my fighters a couple days ago, I'm very torn. I'm not torn. I'm going to keep it 100.
Yeah.
I'm pulling for Irene Aldana, not because she's Mexican, you know, not the Latino versus Brazilians or anything like that. Cause people get like that sometimes, you know. I get it when it's American versus a foreigner. You want to go for, you know, American. But, bro, I've been following Aldana and Alexa Grasso since, like, their second fight, mm-hmm. when they were in Invicta, when they opened up the Lobo gym with her uncle. Like, I've been following them for a while.
They're legit. And
you know, so I've been attached to them. I feel like I've been watching their whole growth, even through their UFC career. And now, like you said, all these Mexicans got the belts, Moreno, Grasso, and Pantera. Yeah. And now Irene, listen, I love the lioness. You know, she's the GOAT. She's the GOAT, and she's been
pioneer MMA.
Yeah, fun to watch. She's a veteran right now. I think she's a great person. I love that she's got a family. She's become such a mother, and it's all great to watch. So it's nothing to, if she wins, I'm happy as fuck with her, for her. But I'm pulling for Aldana. Mm-hmm. It's time to change the throne a little bit, and
the passing of the torch.
Yeah, and see that go. So that's later on tonight. I can't wait for that. By the way, what is it you got planned for the rest of the time being here?
I'm hoping to hang out with a friend after this. I always, so again, like, I date, you know, and there's a lot of people that And I think you've noticed where it's like you date and you're like, ah, you guys are cool, but, you know, we don't vibe like that.
Right.
And then there's always that one person you're like, yo, you're dope, you know, and I travel too much to where I can't do that. You know, right. Where I can't actually have a serious relationship without it being long distance and right. for them understanding.
It's difficult,
anyways,
yeah.
No, it sucks. But when I went on my date with the girl who worked at Panadería in Mexico, I was like, yo, you're a diamond in the rough. That's what I like to call them. Like, you shine brighter than every other diamond I see. Like, this diamond's nice, but it's not my style, you know? So she was dope, but there's a girl here that I hang out with that I'm hoping to see and hang out with again. I saw her a couple days ago. We actually, there's a Puerto Rican spot by the goat shed that we went to, so that was cool. But just hang out and just,
you know, you mentioned that, you know, I date too. Very, very rarely. Like, I mean, I would date right now. It doesn't matter. But yeah. The reason I say rarely is because I don't, my time is worth a lot, it's you know, valuable. And my energy is worth even more. And I don't want to keep wasting it and spreading it thin just because I'm trying shit out. You yeah. know, I like to hook up just like anybody else who likes yeah. to hook up. But I'm not with the headache and spending all kind of money just to hope that it goes that route because the vibe isn't that real. But the attraction is good enough. And that, God damn, that whole thing is energy draining, dude, bro. Hey. It's energy draining. But look at here, right? I just got on Hinge like maybe like 5-6 months ago. Mm-hmm. I haven't been on an app forever. And I'm having the worst luck. No matches, no nothing. Dude,
it's
but
it's a wild.
I don't pay. I know a lot of people like to say that they don't pay. I think you're full of shit. Yeah. Most of you fuckers pay. You got all these roses to hand out to chicks and shit like that.
A bunch of the guys told me, they're like, sign up for platinum on Tinder. You'll get matched all the time.
You see what I mean? And I like, don't. What? See, I don't. But anyhow, by luck or whatever, you know, matched up with this chick. And long story short, bro, it was dope. It was a vibe. First on the messages, yeah. It was a vibe, and she was the first one to say it, like, "Yo, you really come off as a rare breed of person." And I said, "Ditto." You know, I like your energy. Blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. She's like, "You know, we need to hang out." It's not. Well, I gave her. I said, "Well, fuck, take my number. Let's talk." So now we're talking. Now we have our first date, and it went phenomenal. No bullshit. It went phenomenal. I don't know how much better it could have went, yeah. unless you're talking about hooking up, which we didn't do all that, right? And there was only just, you know, a couple of kisses at the end of the night, right? But getting to know each other, vibing, talking shit, saying how we are, blah, 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 went great. You would think, okay, I landed one.
Yeah.
Nah, bro. And I don't know if she's watching. I don't give a fuck if yeah. she's watching. She knows, bitch.
Yeah.
She knows that she has something that she didn't finish, I guess, you know, like I guess I'm a rebound again, or she yeah. was unsure of what she had going on
so
with somebody.
She was still going through whatever she
without wanting to admit it.
Yeah.
I gave her the opportunity. And this bothers me because it's like, bitch, I gave you the opportunity to keep it real. Mm-hmm. Keep it real. I told you I'm a real ass motherfucker. You don't got to sugarcoat anything. Are you seeing somebody? No? Yeah. Are you on some breakup like you kind of heard and this and that? And I'm just, are you sure? Are you somebody who likes to date multiple people?
Especially
that's cool
if,
too
if
you want
rebound,
to.
You know, it's like, hey, exactly. if I'm a rebound, I'll treat you like if I'm the rebound compared to being so emotional with you and open it up. So
right.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm sure there's going to be, whether it's male or female, I'm going to go on a limb and say the females will defend it more. They might say, well, maybe she didn't want to disclose all that because she thought she was over it. Maybe she didn't want to disclose that there was somebody still lingering because it'll push you away. Yeah, maybe you're right. That's true. Probably would have. Mm-hmm. Ain't that the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Don't you guys always complain when men do dog ass shit? Like, you know, just keep it real.
Just be open.
Brutal honesty, as long as it's delivered appropriately, depending on the situation, is 99% of the time the best policy. Mm-hmm. You might not like what I said, but you're going to respect that I was truthful about it and I didn't hold back. And whether it hurt your feelings or you didn't get the results you wanted, you're still, at the end, the results will be more positive than negative because I didn't lie.
I'd rather find out now than have it be prolonged and the emotions are even more. It's like, you could have told me this earlier.
Right, right. No, and then she was trying to do a follow-up after she pretty much like ghosted me, trying to be kind of apologetic. And then I was like, listen, you obviously got something going on. Mm-hmm. It's all good. I wish you the best. We're cool. No ill thought. Yeah. All we did was went on a date and we hung out a second time after. No, there's nothing going on. Like, here she came back at me like trying to say nothing's going on.
Yeah.
Of course there is. So anyways, the dating game is a motherfucker. I know it sounds like you know, we left off earlier on. You were mentioning that one day you were hoping to be a father, and I know you will be, and you'll find a good one. But yeah, I would say it'd probably be on the tail end of your career because all this traveling is too difficult, and you really don't want anything holding you back if this is where you're at. You know, if let's say you do this fight in Colombia and you're with Brave right now. I don't know what your contract is about, but let's say, because, you know, one championship is kicking ass and they look phenomenal. PFLs look fucking making big moves, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously UFC out the picture. So if that's, okay, now we're more homebound. Now we're, you know, maybe now you can date somebody, you know, yeah, within the states and all that. But while you're doing all these cunts, nah,
it's,
dude,
it's not a wise decision. Because a lot of people, like, I do have swagger. I can't talk to women. I can do this. I date a lot. But, you know, obviously there's the diamonds in the rough, and then there's like, there's just the rough, you know. But for me, I'm like, you know what, man, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. And I look at my last relationship, awesome. It just worked out the way it did. And 7 years later, it was great for the most part. You know, for the most part, positive memories. Things will happen. People are here for seasons. Awesome. In those 7 years, you taught me a lot. Then awesome. I'm going to keep on just going, and maybe I find another person that's there for tomorrow, there for a year, there for another 7 years, maybe there for the rest of my life. So for me, I'm just kind of enjoying the opportunities. I'm not trying to force anything. But when it comes to the dating thing where it's like, man, I found some great women that want more from me, and I'm like, I would love to, but I honestly can't because my goals in front of me are too important. And that's the hard thing. Again, anime has taught me this. Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood talks about equivalent exchange. Pretty much whatever you want, you're going to have to give in return. Mm. So you're going to give that same thing. So for example, when people were talking about Amanda Nunes, you know, two belt champion, this, that, yada, yada, yada. It's like, how much time does she have to give up? You know, she had to leave her country. She had to do this. She had to do that. She had to leave gym. She had to do whatever. It's like, for me, you know, I look at it with my father passing away. I look at it with my last relationship kind of going to shit. Could I have spent more time with my father? For sure. Could I have spent more time in my last relationship? For sure. Could I have been there more in person in just friendships in general with everyone? For sure. But on the other side is I started to win belts. I started to defend those belts. I started to go to the UFC. I started to make money. I started to do this, do that. But I wouldn't have gotten that without sacrificing this.
Right.
You know, so to the person, it's what's more important. For me, I don't have anyone, like you said, holding me back to where I'm so emotionally attached to somebody where I'm like, you know what? This is hard to decide. Since I let that go, it's not hard for me to decide anymore. This is my year so far, or at least the past 5 weeks. Went to Mexico for the past 2 weeks, went to Florida for a day after Tulum, Serbia for a week to commentate for Titan. I'm here for Florida for a week. I leave next week to Atlanta to corner Amber Liebrock for the PFL, and then I'll be home in Chicago for a week. I'm going to try my best to see everyone as I possibly can while also training. I'm in Las Vegas for 6 weeks, getting ready for my fight. Then I do solitude. I don't go out and mingle. I don't do anything. Like I want to focus on my fight. I'm away from home, from family, my loved ones. Fuck everybody. I'm doing what I need to do. I'm mingling in the gym, and then I'm like, I'm back in my cave, pretty much. Then 2 weeks in Colombia for my fight. After that, I'm doing an AFE tour, Armed Forces Entertainment. I'm literally home for maybe 2 days, and then I'm going overseas again. I'll be in Europe visiting 4 countries in 2 weeks, visiting the U.S. military, doing that again in September, and then I'm supposed to, if everything goes well, fight again in October. And then I'm supposed to fight again in December. So it's just literally training right. camp. This, and I don't right. like being home for my training camps. So as much as I love
you mentioned
home,
going to Vegas for 6 weeks. Yeah. What gym are you training
I'll be at? Extreme Couture.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
There's such an open gym that because there's so many, it's a mecca. You know, so many people come in and out to where Drew Dober, he's not even part of that gym. He's part of Team Elevation. He came in 1 week because the coaches are cool. Like, hey, yeah, pay for your week. Come on in. And, you know, our guys could use some fun rounds with you. And I'm sure you'll learn something. And as long as you bring positivity and you're not an asshole in the gym.
Right.
Dude, come on in and let's have some fun. If you're a dick, hey, cool. You can spar with these guys. You're going to get your ass kicked and we're going to kick you out. You know, so my time right now is traveling. And I don't think I have any kids. Hopefully not. It's like I deny a lot of calls, but you know, I just do my thing. And
are you hotel bound the whole time, or do they have dorms and shit over there?
So over there, I'm actually staying with my friend, Joshua Augustine. I'm gonna stay on his, you know, his little futon, which I think I might buy an extra futon for him, but because his thing's like a rock.
See the sacrifice that again, man. A lot of people don't know that fighters go through. Like just to hear you, you know, say all that and trying to balance it all out, and you're gonna sleep on a futon for fucking 6 weeks.
I'm a person who's very. I always mess around with my manager when I tore my MCL. He would come in to. I couldn't walk for 2 weeks, so he's like, you know, come in the little piss can. He would like, you know, I'm going to dump that out for you. And then he'd come back. He's like, you need anything? I was like, oh, just some love and affection. And he's like, go fuck yourself, shorty. And just lock the door. I'm like, you know. So for me, I'm a person who thrives on like physical touch, love and affection, all that stuff. You know, words of affirmation. But I don't get that. You know, but I'm like, that's the sacrifice I need to give. But also understand that I don't need it from anybody else. It'd be nice. And I'm going to love it when I get it. But let me give myself the words of affirmation. Let me go in the gym. And when people say, like you're saying, dude, that fucking work was great. But that's because also I've been putting so much time in the gym that people don't see to that one moment where you saw sparring. And that's just a regular day. Mm-hmm. You know, but I want to get that where I can use it inside the cage, be mentally there, 100% mentally there. Because again, Max Holloway did the interview with Joe Rogan talking about once you get to a certain level, everyone has the eight limbs, everyone has talent, everyone's better, right, stronger, this,
right,
that.
Right.
But it's who can show up.
Right.
And that's what matters most. I mean, Amanda Nunes, when she lost to Juliana Pena the first time, it's like,
yeah, she was not there.
You can tell she wasn't there. Yeah. That was for me in my Alex Perez fight. I'm like, man, I just wasn't there. Could he have still beat me? Probably, for sure. But I also won't know until maybe the rematch ever, you know, happens. So for me, it's like, I want to be mentally there so I don't have to say woulda, shoulda, coulda. If you beat me, man, hey, this is part of the sport. You know, it just so happens it really messes up our career compared to like a football game.
Question, with all this balancing act that you're doing and what happened with your dad and, like, so on and so
I'm a
forth.
Good juggler.
How often are you talking to your mom?
Man, the crazy thing about that is like we talk, but growing up, I was raised by my mother. So she would more vent to me, try to make me the gentleman that I am today and do this and do that. So I'm definitely a mother's boy, a mother's child, compared to my brother was my father's child. And you always want the opposite. You always want things you never had or can't right. have. I don't know. It's just life.
Basketball players want to be rappers. Rappers want to be ball players.
Tyron Woodley wants to be a rapper. I get it, you know?
Right.
So it's the thing you can't have. So for me, when I was a kid, it was always my mom. Everything was well. We would talk for the most part. But I would more than likely just listen. And then as I got older, my relationship with my father grew, especially as I started to become a professional and stuff like that. So we grew and everything was great. When he passed away, by the time he passed away, we were best friends. I'd call him every day. We'd figure shit out. So especially when he passed, I'm like, yo, this is really the only guy I vent to that we would have conversation. Or he would just shut up and let me talk. You know, and I'm just like, damn, I don't have anybody. And eventually when I started to like lose everyone that I really wanted, I was like, you know what, let me call my brother. Let me call my mom. My brother and I talk, but he more vents. I'm like, oh, I called the vent. Now I don't know. I'm listening to him talk. And my mom, because my brother doesn't have anybody, so I'm his venting mechanism. My mom, she raised me to be very independent. So naturally, when we call each other, it's almost like a business meeting. We're like, hey, how you doing? You got some mail? What are you going to do today at 5? You going to be out for dinner? No? Well, hey, I love you. I hope you have a good day. And then click, and it's like, damn, I called to talk a little bit, but. Okay, so I wouldn't say it's an awkward thing, but we're still very close, but we're so independent that, like, I remember even trying to hug her one time when my father passed away. I was like, I can tell I'm her, you know, so I'm like, I can tell you're being super strong. I'm not trying to cry in front of people either, so I remember, like, holding her, and I was like, fuck it, let me just let the waterworks out. I start crying, and I'm just kind of like, in my head, I'm like, is she crying? And she's just like, all right. No, hey, wipe your tears. Go ahead, do your thing. I'm just like, damn it. She's, you know, being a mother, which is great. But I'm like, mom, it's okay to use me as a crush sometimes.
She's the Puerto Rican or the
No,
Mexican.
She's the Mexican. She's the strong, independent Mexican woman. You know, like, I don't need a man. I don't need this. I'm going to do myself and do what I need to do, you know, and take care of her family. That's
it's crazy mom. how genetically predisposed Mexicans are to that. Yeah. Like, it's very inexplicable, you know. It's kind of like Russians and the tough bringing that they have because of the way they are, but it builds a certain type of individual.
Dude, they don't complain. They just go to work. That's it. Like, they obviously can't complain, but they're still fucking doing the work, doing whatever they need to do, and that's my mom, you know. So
is she still busy working? Is she retired?
She's working. She's 60 years old. I think she'll be 61 this year, which is crazy to say, but she definitely looks like she's 45. She's very fit.
That's awesome.
Still runs
good.
5 miles every day. Like, she's
oh, that's
for
great.
6 years
great.
Old, man. She's active. But and it's also funny because she's 60, I'm 30, and we both. So for me, when I would bring a girl home, it was my relationship. I had a 5-year relationship, then a 7-year relationship. So I've only had relationships. So even while dating, I'm used to giving love instead of just like, oh, you're pretty cool, let's do whatever and kind of go from there. I'm used to everything, you know, straight up front. Mm-hmm. My mom obviously was with my father for like 30 plus years. So when I started like dating, she goes, oh, who's this new girl? I was like, I don't want to introduce her to you. She goes, why? I was like, because you'll get attached. You'll be like, oh, it's the next one, the next big one. And
right,
then it goes
right.
from there. And then now my father obviously passed away. So she has that excuse, but I'm just like, oh, what are you doing tonight? She goes, oh, I'm going to go out with this guy. I'm just like, and so both her and I are always kind of like, you motherfucker, because she liked my ex. Obviously, I miss my father, so it was just like, all right, yeah. It was just like, all right, mom, just send me your location. Be safe. Do all this stuff.
Slightly awkward.
Yeah, it's slightly awkward, but it's just funny. It's
yeah, I mean, you have to understand and respect each other's space. And she's seeing her young son blew him into a, you know, more mature man who's handling things differently. And I mean, damn, you were in two long ass relationships. Yeah. Holy fuck.
So 16.
You definitely earned the right to wild out a little bit. Yeah, and fucking
16 to like 27, 28. And yeah, two back-to-back relationships. But the crazy thing about that, so my mom went out one day. I'm at a carnival with my friends back at home. And my mom went out and she got drunk, whatever. You know, she's doing her thing. I get a message request on Instagram from a person I don't follow. And it the name was like Miss Rose or whatever. I'm like, okay, who's this? And it's like, hey, I'm with your mom right now. I just want to let you know she's awesome. We're keeping her safe. I'm like, what the fuck? And she sends me a picture and it's like three beautiful women. And then my mom and they're like, and I'm like, what the hell? And basically the way she was talking like to me, I was like, is my mom trying to set me up?
Oh, you think that's what it was? Yeah. She wasn't just talking about her lovely son. No,
the girl was like in her late 30s, early 40s, whatever. But I was like, damn, my mom's trying to hook me up. That's awesome.
That's one thing my mom has not tried to do. Bless her heart. Because she knows how fucking picky I am. Yeah. And if she were to attempt it, she would have to be as picky as I am because she knows how picky I am. And she's, you know, she's giving me shit about it. But she's never attempted. My mom doesn't meet enough people to try to do that. So, you know.
But it's reasonably, like, it's a good thing to be picky. It's funny because I was thinking about that too, where like I'm dating, obviously dates don't go as well as I hope for. And I'm like, man, this girl wasn't this girl wasn't that. I had high expectations, but that's a good thing. If people don't meet your expectations, don't dumb yourself down because all you're going to get back is bullshit. The whole time you're just going to be upset. So why even waste the time with it? I've let a lot of like, not just females, but like friends go too, where I'm like, yo, again, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. So when we talked about women bringing up, you know, their past traumas, you know, whether you're dating a guy or just you're the rebound or whatever, man, I've gone on dates where everything's cool and girls like, oh, so what do you, you know, what do you want to do in life? I'm like, honestly, my big goal is, you know, family and kids. And some girls like, why the fuck would you want family and kids? You have I drive a Land Rover. She's like, you drive a beautiful car. You know, are you good looking guy? You travel the world. You do this, you do that. You're always on TV. Why the fuck would you want to be single? I'm pretty sure you got girls all over you. I was like, damn, your past guy definitely cheated.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. So I was like, man, I just got here, you know? So it's crazy where that's why I say I could say now I'm ready for a relationship. You know, obviously I can't do it, but I can say mentally I'm ready for a relationship because I went through all that bullshit to where if I do go with somebody else, I'm not bringing up my ex all the time. I'm not bringing up random shit or traumas and putting their past mistakes on this new person that is, you know, pretty much innocent the entire time, right? Until they do something.
Mission PT Rehab and Recovery is your one-stop shop for all physical therapy and wellness needs. Our licensed physical therapists provide customized hands-on treatments for all sports injuries, accidents, workers' comp, and more. No doctor prescriptions required for the first 30 days. Mission PT has one-on-one personal training for sports-specific needs, as well as general weight loss and strengthening. We are conveniently located steps from Dayland Mall. Call today for your free 30-minute consult, 786-409-5589. That's 786-409-5589. Mission PT, perform at your best.
But yeah, man, I mean, we're in some weird times. I'm sure this gets said every era. We're in some weird times when it comes to this dating game. This unnecessary feminist movement going on. You have guys who they want to be more vulnerable. They want to open up, but they don't. And all kind of shit in between. Dude, did you even realize? I'm not a news guy, by the way. I'm going to switch fucking gears right now. I don't watch the news. I don't like to hear about all the negativity always going on, the shootings. This fuck coming from Chicago. That's all you guys got going on, right? But there was a news clip that was huge. It was viral. That's why I caught it, because it was on YouTube. Dude, a fucking alien ship, a UFO, a UAP.
Oh, you were
going to
tell me about that.
Yes, okay. So in Las Vegas, the naysayers are going to talk the shit all they want to talk. Just watch. It's going to develop. A couple things happened at one time. One, there was a cop who was addressing an issue while in Vegas. His chest cam is on. You can see way down the street. You can see the skyline in the background, but it's dark. It's dark. It's nighttime. And then you see what looks like a bright blue comet, you know, like a comet that's about to crash, but without the trail, you know, without the flame trail. Mm-hmm. So it's like a solid blue light, almost cartoonish. It's just going, and you can't see no crash or anything. So a cop caught that on his chest cam.
Body cam.
Then there was a phone call shortly after that to the police department in Las Vegas. And it sounds like sounds like a Mexican kid who speaks pretty good English. And he's like, Don't quote me word for word, but I'm not making this up, bro. I wish I had somebody to bring it up on the screen right now. We haven't found that person yet.
Yeah.
Listen, hey, yes, I want to report something crashed in our backyard. And I know this is going to sound crazy, but I'm not making this up. Like, it's like a spacecraft. And two things came out of it, but they're not like human. They're like big creatures, like 8-10 feet tall and huge eyes. One of them's looking right now at me. Like, this is, I know this sounds crazy. I know it's bogus, but and the lady, the dispatcher, is like, okay, so two suspects are in your backyard, isn't it? So she obviously reports to the cops. The cop who got the call, who's supposed to go, he admits it later on, and you can hear him admitting it, and he talks about it. He thought, this is some lunatic shit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to waste my time. This is, I need to do cop shit. So he was going to call some, like, I don't know who it is, discovery people, investigative people to go handle that. But then his partner calls him and says, hey, man, are you the one who's going to go do that call? He's like, yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and brush it off and tell whoever to go, you know, visit these wackos. He goes, well, I don't know, bud. I saw that fucking flash. Mm-hmm. He goes, what? He goes, yes. While I was doing a traffic stop, I saw the flash and I think I got it on my camera. Wow. Well, you know what? Let me go see what's up then. So the cop goes and talks to the people and interviews them. Dude, the dude got the willies. He didn't even want to go to the backyard. The cop goes, nah, that's not my pay grade, man. That shit gives me the heebie-jeebies. I'm going to call the next people in charge to go figure out what's next. All that just happened. I need to ask you. First of all, what are your beliefs when it comes to extraterrestrials?
I mean, you got to think about it. At least my perspective is, if we're alive, why can't other planets or other galaxies? Because we've discovered other galaxies and other planets outside, you know, our Milky Way realm. So it's like, why wouldn't there be stuff? We already found other planets that are just as habitable as ours, just in different galaxies that we'll never, at least at this moment in our lifetime, never be able to reach. So it's like, why wouldn't there be? You know, plus, with all the different species that we have on this planet, what's it to say that other species don't need what we need and they can survive, you know, in different atmospheres? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, I personally say, why not? You know, obviously, with the things that happen in my life, your life, and just how this life has gone in general, it's like, there's a lot of things I didn't expect, didn't believe, and out of nowhere happened anyway. So it's like, it doesn't go past me to say that there haven't been extraterrestrials here before.
Right,
you know,
right.
Especially with the Area 51 and all this stuff. Yeah. It's like,
So now look what else just happened, right? And again, my YouTube channel, when I turn on my TV and when I go to YouTube, because that's all I watch.
I was going to say, especially talking about it, like Google picks it up, it's like,
boom. Yeah. Well, no, I guess, you know, the algorithm is going to feed you what you look into. And if you watch it too long, they're going to give you more videos. So here comes another one. It's not a crash landing or anything. It's this guy who was a super high-ranking official. You can look him up. He's on there. You can see all the pictures. He's been with the fucking our Department of Defense. I don't know what, for the longest time, whatever. The dude's a whistleblower now. He's the most famous whistleblower right now next to Snowden. And he just said it. This all happened like 3-4 days ago. And he says on News Nation, shout out to News Nation. He says he for sure hasn't verified it himself, but top officials who are willing to come forward and admit this and to say that, yeah, he's right, I did tell him that. Mm-hmm. Top officials who worked it, saw it, heard about it, saw a video, whatever. He has verified that we have multiple, he did a number, about 12 discs, 12 spacecrafts in our possession that they have never disclosed to the world. And they won't even tell their own president. Like, this is secret. Like, we're talking about some real Men in Black bullshit that is just so secretive. But the dude is blowing the whistle and he says, yeah, man, from 12, if I'm not mistaken. And he says, when it all starts, some of them crashed, some of them parked. They asked him, well, that doesn't happen by themselves. Are we talking about orbs or were there people driving it? He goes, yes, there was beings driving it. Yes. And they're like, do they have the beings bodies? He's like, yes, they have beings bodies as well. I don't want to go any further and say that more to it. I think he wanted to say that there's some live ones and we're talking to him, but he didn't want to go that far. Yeah. Anyhow, it's huge. It's bananas. What does that do to the world? Like, what would that do to your thought? Are you a religious guy?
I'm not a religious guy.
Do you pray at all?
I'm not going to say yes and no, because I wouldn't say that I haven't gone through some shit where I haven't gotten on my knees and looked at them and go, yeah. Why? You know?
Right.
So I try to live as you know, prosperously as I can, you know, as positive as I can, mm-hmm. with some type of moral code, but I don't live my life by a book.
So this wouldn't throw you off then, because, you know, this type of stuff will throw religious communities off.
Yeah.
It has to. What are you going to say about that? It's not in your Bible. Is it a God? Is it a demon? Is it a blah, 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 blah? So what does this do to your beliefs when you soak it in a little bit more, like, God damn, a spacecraft, and
yeah.
now this guy's a blowing whistle, like...
Well, that I think that's the hard part about religion, is that you have to, if you are an extreme whatever, you know, you have to follow whatever book you know, you're reading, and that's the hard part. Is I remember when, you know, I used to do Bible study when I was a kid, and, you know, my friends kind of like trapped me. They're like, oh, we're going to play basketball. And then the last hour is like Bible study. I'm like, damn it, I just came here for the free basketball snacks. You know, it's like, you son of a bitch just got me. And it was cool. Like, obviously, learn good morals and positive stuff. But when it's like, it limits me from doing what I want to do, then I was like, you know, I'm going to live my life by some of the positive things. But if it's limited me, I'm not going to do this. You know, I get it for that perspective.
Right.
That's just not the life that I want to live. For me, when I hear about aliens and this, that, I'm like, again, when we're talking about rolling with the punches, I'm like, oh, well, cool, another obstacle. I think it's a positive thing, because whatever technology they have, obviously, they're more advanced than us.
Of course, to get right. here.
So it's like, hopefully, we can use some of that technology and integrate in our real-life society. The only bad part is I feel like whatever, since it hasn't been disclosed, it's just being used for weapons. You know,
behind
the scenes,
right.
or war scenes, stuff like that, because that's super profitable. So that's what I believe. But that's the shitty part about, you know, our society, is like, whatever can gain us more power, we're going to keep until we can finally use it.
As an anime fan that you are, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are, I'm not. I mean, I think it's cool. It looks cool and all that, but I've just never been into it.
It's just like adult cartoons, pretty much.
Yeah, that is true. What are some weird quirks about you, or things that people don't know that you typically don't?
Well, see, that's the bad thing. I'm so open naturally.
That's
like,
good.
That people will be like,
they already know.
You know, especially because of Sunday Question Day, like they'll ask. Again, we talked about mental traumas. We talked about why I watched anime, why, even why I started fighting Power Rangers, Dragon Ball Z, Goku, all these different role models. You know, for me, I think the biggest thing is just figuring out what I like and what maybe could even be a trigger. Anime, some of that stuff has gotten to me. Like, I remember watching Neon Evangelion. What was it? Neon Genesis Evangelion. There you go. It's a super hard name, but it's pretty much about like kids with PTSD. Like, they're forcing kids to fight a battle for somebody else. And it's a lot of religions behind the scene, but like, while watching it, the main character is a person that's just a pleaser, you know, and I'm relating to him because I talked about spreading myself too thin. I'm always trying to help and please people. The kid doesn't love himself. He was spreading himself too thin, where like he would go through panic attacks, mental issues, and he was just saying yes and now hurting himself more and more to where it was only negative reinforcement. I learned that the hard way in college, where my coach is always like, you're going to be this, shut the fuck up, you're going to do that, do that. And he was that drill sergeant pretty much. And that's when I found out, I'm like, holy fuck, I can't do negative reinforcement. Like, that's just, pet me and call me a good boy. I'm a fucking dog. Like, this makes me feel good. It makes me want to work harder for you. I'm a natural pleaser. So if you can, like, motivate me in a happy way, I want to make you happy, you know? But if you treat me like shit, go fuck yourself. And the only hard part is when I say go fuck yourself, it actually might hurt me too, because I have no motivation to help, you know, in a certain aspect. So I learned that from that show. I was like, holy shit, I'm not a, you know, negative reinforcement type of guy. So...
When you fight, what kind of pre-hype? What are you like for those couple of hours before? Because I tell my fighters, hey, I'm not that, you know, hype you up, huge pep talk. Like, the work is done. We did the work. I just want you to stay focused. I want you to visualize. I want you to whatever. But I ask them, do you need that type? Are you that type? If you are, I can crank up. Yeah. I can surround us with those who would do that. There's nothing for me to get hype. I'm a fucking high energy guy, but I'm just not that. It's your fucking time. Go feed your kids. This guy's trying to take food off your plate. Nah, I don't get the fuck out of here. You know, I'm not that guy. I'm like, nah, you know what you got to do. You know what the job is. Stay focused. Make sure you listen to your corner. What else do you need? What about you?
So I would like to say I'm a very empathetic guy, so I pick up on people's emotions. Obviously, I know if you're nervous. I know if that person's nervous, or I could tell. But with their you know, mannerisms and stuff like
right.
that. But for me, I need just positivity. Like, let's have fun in the back. Dude, I'm about to go get my ass kicked no matter what. So let's just have fun in the back. I don't want super, I'm not a serious person. Even though obviously my life is serious, this and that. And I can be serious when I need to be, but let me enjoy this before I go in there because I don't want to be in there. I just have to do my fucking job. And then once it's done, let's go have donuts and do this and do that. Let's be serious when the fight matters most. So for me, there was one fight I took my nutritionist, Lutrition. And I was fighting Pedro Nobre. He was 18-2. I already won the belt for Titan FC, and I called out the next guy in line. I'm only 3-0. But I called out 18-2 Pedro Nobre because he was that highlight. I looked up to Manny Pacquiao where he defended the belt multiple times, went up multiple weight classes, and fought the best of the best. That's what type of legacy I want. If I lose, I lost to the best. That's, you know, commendable compared to I just lost some scrub. Oh, damn, I fucked up. Right. So I'm in the back, and everyone's for sure nervous. My coach, Master Bob Shermer, knows me. So if I'm in a positive state, he's in a positive state. And my nutritionist is like, he's been with John Jones, Anthony Pettis, Johnny Hendricks, all these UFC champion level guys where they're super serious in, you know, different aspects, but they're drilling, they're doing stuff in the back. And me, I'm not doing anything. I'm on my knees. I'm stretching. I'm kind of doing this, doing that. And I'm main event. So I'm hours just chilling there. And he comes up to me. He goes, hey, man, you gonna do anything? You need any help? I'm going to stretch you out. I'm like, no, I'm good. He's like, okay. I ended up winning the fight in the 86-second knockout. And he's like, dude, what the fuck? I was like, I'm just a chill person. If I'm at peace, yeah, having fun and doing me, like,
right,
that's all we did was talk smack in the back.
That's dope.
If I can have a good time, I'm happy going in there. But if I don't go in there with a smile, there's a problem. And the two fights, technically, one is an amateur and one is a pro, that I've coincidentally didn't go in there with a smile, I lost. So it's like that plays a huge factor. I look at it as if I'm not going in there having fun at my job, which involves me getting beat up, then why am I even doing it? So I want to go in there having a smile and going and having a good time. But the opposite factor for me is once I walk in, you'll see me walk into the cage like, yeah, yeah. Once I walk in, it goes blank face.
Boom.
It's almost like a movie where it's like, yeah, yeah, and just does this. And I'm like, people are like, yo, what the fuck happened? And then there's almost no expression until the fight's over. So it's a big game changer for me because I kind of go on autopilot where it's like, cool, let me let my alter ego out for whatever duration of the fight, and then that's it. You know, my next fight being 25 minutes, it comes out for 25 minutes, and then deuces, go back in your cage.
I love that. I love that aspect about fighters, how everybody's so different and how they channel that energy. Some need the buildup because they're too nervous. Some need the rage. They want to feel like, I got to kill this guy. I got to dig deep, and I got to make it seem like this dude is going to ruin my career, and I need to break his fucking neck. And some are just there to do the job. They're locked in, like super focused. And then you got the ones who are beyond you with the having fun. They're literally having fun throughout the fight. They're fucking
having
smiling.
A great time, yeah.
Kevin Holland. Yeah, people like that. I love to see all that, you know? And I know some people will say like, well, that's why Kevin Holland has lost several of his last fights. Well, he also won a lot.
Yeah, but he's done all this.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think that's amazing how people try to find that method of dealing with the madness because you're talking about chaos, dog. You're talking about two motherfuckers going in the cage in front of the world, you know?
I've had 40, this would be, I believe, my 40th MMA fight going in from amateur and pro. So it's like I've had tons of experience and kickboxing and Muay Thai and 100 in wrestling. So I've had experience to go, all right, this method, you know, didn't work. Cool, let's try this. That
right,
didn't work.
Right. Makes sense.
You know, there's days where, you know, I do all the same things and maybe I don't get the same feeling. And there's some days where, like, I do everything and I'm spot on. So it just depends on the circumstances. But for me, I'm a very, again, I kind of feed off people's energy. So if everyone's good, awesome. But no matter what, I've learned there's no more excuses. Whatever happens, happens. Again, when I talked about the Alex Burns fight, I remember talking about it for maybe about 2 years when I was still going through my shit. I was just like, you know, man, because of this, I lost. Because of that, I lost. There was always an excuse. I don't know what he was going through. Maybe his father died too. Maybe, you know, this shit, that, whatever was happening. I don't know what he was going through, but he still showed up, you know? And then years later, I see Khabib fighting. Given there was 8 months, I give him the little bit of grieving time compared to me, 3 weeks. But it's like, I get your father was there every day. My father was at home, and I get to call him every day. There's a big difference.
Right, of course.
But then after, you still show your emotions. That showed how much you still had to go through, especially being such a big name like Khabib. I'm pretty sure people are messaging him, you know, my condolences, this, that, and he's still pushing through it. No matter what, at the end of the day, it's on you. It's not your fault. It's not that. I used to blame everyone, but that was also, again, not trying to blame myself and realize, like, oh, shit, it really is just me. You ever be like, oh, you ever figure out maybe you're the problem?
Exactly.
Like, oh, shit, no, actually, it was me, my bad. Yeah. You know, and actually, when it came to a lot of the realization of figuring out who I was, especially in my last relationships with other people in general, I was just like, oh, fuck, I guess it was me. That's what they were talking about the whole time, my bad. So I had to figure out what worked for me, what didn't, and how to overcome my triggers, my traumas, all that stuff, and even use that as my strength.
This I think, applies in life. Not, this isn't just for fighters. You figure those things out in your late 20s, 30, early 30s, because by then you've gone through enough experiences.
We hope.
Yes, exactly. We hope. That is well said, because if you haven't, there's a reason. Your dumbass is prolonging this. Maybe you're too stubborn. Maybe. But for those who have had at least a relationship or two before these 30s, heartbreak or two before these 30s, struggles, up and downs, highs and lows, things of that nature, you start figuring shit out in your 30s or going into the 30s, typically, you know, aside from those who don't. And then you formulate. And then that's when, you know, that's when you redirect yourself, or just you adjust to life and then you proceed forward. And hopefully your adjustment is a wise one, because much like you just said, sometimes people don't, and they're too stubborn. They don't have the right people around them to help them become better versions of themselves, you know?
It's a crazy thing. Like, what do they say? It's like a lion hangs out with other lions. He doesn't go hang out with hyenas and different stuff. So it's hang out with the positive people that are trying to get you somewhere. For me, my upbringing, yeah, I had my dad, I had my brother, great guys, but weren't the best role models. So for me, was the people in the gym, even though they weren't, in a sense, where I wanted to lead, they were like, you know what, let's take you to this direction. This is the way you should go, because we went left, it didn't work, you should go right. And my brother was that positive reinforcement, so was my dad. But being inside the gym was forcing me to be around people that are trying to be positive, trying to change their life, whether they've been in prison, whether they fucked up and did this, did that. They were like, man, we don't want you to do this, shorty, we want you to do more. So for me, when it comes to all the traumas, it's like, man, if I'm a jealous person and I go hang out with other jealous people, man, we're just feeding into the jealousy and having those conversations all the time. Or how many times have you had friends where you're like, all you're doing is just gossiping? It's like, damn, am I the shit talker? Damn, I guess I've been the hater the whole time. You know, when I'm talking about haters, like, I'm talking shit. So I'm obviously the hater. So it's like, I had to kind of, you know, push, I wouldn't say push people away, but it's like, oh, you know, I'm going to hang out with you less. You're cool.
I get it.
But let me hang out with people. I listened to Flex Lewis's podcast with Wes Watson. And, oh, man, he's like, frequency is what you frequently see. And he goes, my frequency is what I frequently see. So it's only positive people. I don't want to fuck with anybody else. When people say, I'm having a bad day, he goes, okay, well, cool. If you don't mind, go have your bad day over there, because I'm not trying to deal with that shit. You know, I'll help you, I'll vent, whatever. But if you're not trying to push through and you just want to have a petty party, it's like, I'm not going to fuck with it. So for me, it's like, I'm just trying to hang out with positive people. That's why when we talked about talking to Dean or talking to positive people, it's like, maybe, I'm not saying for sure, but maybe you've been through it. Let me put out my 2 cents and see, this is my dilemma. Can you give me some 2 cents back? And there's that equivalent exchange where it's like, you know, for Dean, maybe, you know, it is hard for him to give me that advice. But even for him, he has his son. He's like, you know what? Shorty's older than my kid. Maybe my son might go through some type of adversity with this. Fuck it. At least this is good practice for me, too. To where if it goes good or bad, at least hopefully the next time it can go better for my son.
Those are great words, and I think that's a great way to finish this podcast. I mean, positivity, you know, energy is a real thing. You want to surround yourself with the right type of energy, which comes from the right type of people. You got to know when to say when. You got to know when to walk away. Too many people are not afraid, but they just don't know how to break off.
It's hard to let go. It's fucking super hard, but that's also part of the process. I say, Two things to end it. I'm a judoka, you know, so I'm black belt in judo. The biggest thing is, and especially with hip throws, if you hold on, the wheel continues. I always call judo, if holding on, is like a heart. So it's like, if the love is strong and you hold on, awesome, that heart's gonna stay strong. The only problem is, it's gonna keep on rolling, so it's gonna be topsy turvy. So if you want to land on top, what do? You let go. So sometimes you just gotta fucking break that heart, and there's no more roll, so you stop. Also, with that being said, whether you're trying to be great in your profession, you're trying to be just great in life, trying to be a great human being, you need the best you. For me, I'm not trying to be the best athlete in the world. I'm trying to be the best me in the world, because I know, with that being said, if I can show up, I'm going to be one of the best in the world. Maybe not the best, but, dude, that's fucking great. If I can get to that pinnacle right there, awesome. I've seen me perform my best.
Right.
But if I'm not mentally there, I'm not even going to be in, you know, in the contest.
And that's great. We were talking about relationships early. People should do the same thing before they go into relationships. Make sure you're the best version of you in order to bring that into a relationship and let the relationship bloom from that.
Yeah, plus, I don't want to be a piece of shit to somebody, and now they're talking other shit, and now they're ruining my game to talk to other people. Like, ah, fuck, yo. So for me, I want to be like, if I hang out with the, you know, female, I want to be like, you know what? Maybe we didn't work out, but damn, that was a dope guy. Hopefully my next guy is kind of like him, but what I would like.
Yeah, not hate on you, not think all kind of dumb shit. Of course, I love that too. I think I got a great, I know I got a great track record on that. None of my exes are going to talk shit about me. I don't.
I always be like, hey, what's my Yelp review? And they're like, what? Like, no, seriously, was it good? Was it bad? This, that, yada, yada, yada. So,
Jose, tell everybody where they can follow you out on Instagram and any other social media handles, your websites. I know you had a fundraiser.
My own foundation. Yeah. So Team Shorty Foundation, if people want to donate, I have the link in my bio to Fighters Exchange. Any shirt I sell through their page, 100% of the proceeds go to my foundation. Also, you can go to teamshorty.com, and there's a donation link if people want to support. All the money goes to kids, teens, and young adults to stay inside the gym and off the streets, like we were talking about where – man, I don't have the best role models in the street. So let me stay inside the gym, and I'm forced to be in this scenario. And it's gang members. It's guys that have been in prison. It's guys who've done some bad shit that are trying to change their lives, too. Maybe you've gone through the same thing. Let me try to help you. So with that being said, it helps all those three different generations. Some people graduate college and or you don't even get a chance to go to college. They're like, man.
And those links are in your bio of Instagram, which is?
Jose Shorty Torres. And Shorty Torres MMA for both Facebook and Twitter. And just in general, I do a Sunday question day every Sunday. If people want to ask any personal questions, they're more than welcome to message me directly or even just on Sunday question day and put it out there so I can help other people.
I see you doing big things, bro. You know, I love your energy. I'm so glad we were able to, you know, cross paths at the gym and make this happen. I didn't think this landed in my lap. I was like, Shorty, what's up, y'all? Awesome, we're here. You're a great influence, brother. You spread a lot of positive energy, and I love that about you. Your work ethic is amazing. I saw your skills. I've already seen your skills, but damn, watching it in the cage that day, I was like, holy shit, Shorty's on another level. And I can't wait to see your fight. I continue following your career. Right now, we're going to get some grub. Maybe, I don't know if you're drinking yet. Maybe have a couple of drinks. And then we're going to watch these UFC fights and have some fun. Guys, make sure you go show your support to Shorty Torres. Thank you for showing your support to the Black Sheep Perspective. Don't forget to visit the blacksheepapparel.shop if you want to get your gear. And be ready for all these aliens that are landing, man. Love, peace, and hair grease, guys. Peace.